So if you, in case you don't know, I'm Nick Caudry, I'm the head of the Department of Media and Communications here at LNC, and I'll be chairing tonight's Media Agenda Talk. And I'm really delighted to welcome Marisa Teresa Ronderos. There's so many things I could say about her, and that are going to be relevant to you. She's the director, and has been for the past year in London, of the Open Society Programme on Independent Journalism. And she's overseeing the possibilities for journalism to contribute to transitions to democracy here in London. But before that, she was very active as a journalist and as an editor and as an author in Colombia. In Latin America, she was worked at Semana, which is the leading news magazine in Colombia, in a number of editorial roles. She founded the Ideas for Peace Foundation, and in particular was the editor-in-chief of a very interesting website, which you can still see today, although she doesn't edit it now, called Verdad Abierta, Open Truth, verdadabierta.com, which has testimonies from people who survived the violence in Colombia, histories of violence against unions, histories of the whole history, many different histories, and it's a really fascinating website for you to look at. And she's also the author of a book, which she wrote partly while she was on a fellowship at Harvard University, called Las Guerras Recicladas, Recycled Wars, which has been published in Spanish by Penguin Random, and it's looking for a translator into English. She's going to talk for about 20 minutes, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions. I might throw in a few questions of my own first. Over to Maria, and welcome to the LNC. It's great to have you here.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you to everybody, and Julia, and everybody that made this possible. I'm really glad to be here. It's an honor to be here at the LSC. When I was very, very young, my father was able, after a lot of work, to come here for one semester to take to this university to take some special courses on finance. And this was like a huge accomplishment, and I was just thinking about that when I started this talk, so it's very moving for me to be here. So what I wanted to talk to you a little bit of what I do, or what we do, because it's a team at the Open Society Foundation, so I will explain a little bit of what is that and how we are viewing journalism. This is a global program, so we are funding journalistic enterprises and organizations, and also NGOs that protect journalists all over the world. Of course, with a priority in those places where there is extreme poverty, where there is extreme conflict, or where there is authoritarianism or dictatorship. So first of all, I wanted to share with you some of the ideas here, how we are viewing the world. This is a very, of course, very general kind of view of the world, but this is how we are viewing the main trends in journalism. So there's an upside. There's not a moment so creative and so beautiful in journalism as the moment that we're living today. With such, it's very cheap to set up a website, or it's very cheap to set up a blog, or just simply to start informing from a Facebook account or from a Twitter account. It costs nothing. And so thousands of people are now informing the world, when before it was very restricted voices. So journalism is no longer a conference. Journalism is now a conversation. So that has changed completely the nature of journalism, which used to be, okay, here I am, journalist, I tell you what's happening. And now the people are telling you what's happening, and so your role completely changes. Technology also has provided the field of journalism with an amazing variety of new tools to access information, to systematize information. So now you have all kinds of new journalism. data journalism, structured journalism, ways to portray journalism, multimedia journalism. So you have many ways to gather, to process, and to publish the information in all kinds of platforms. Also, you have information now that it's global, it's seen everywhere, and also in real time. So it's anywhere and anytime. And finally, searching and discovery engines makes all archives of the last, of many years before, because many people are putting new old things into the web, but anything that's on the web is discoverable, it's archivable, it's searchable, even video and audio in most languages or in the main languages. So, but there's also a downside to this story. This serious disruption that created by the technology and the digital revolution has led many valuable independent outlets in the world to a huge crisis. So they have had to close down their investigative reporting units, close down their foreign desks, become very, very small, very lean in some cases. And of course, this has a huge impact in some countries where they don't have any more investigative reporting. I was just talking to one of the foundations, and Knight Foundation in the US, in the United States, and they say all the midtown, like medium town newspapers, who used to be really the voice that would talk to power, the voice that would answer to anybody who was abusing power and make people accountable, are in such a weak position that they're about, some of them have already disappeared, and some of them are in a very difficult position to do good journalism. So now, to the old spirits of journalism, where always journalists have been attacked or put in prison or persecuted, now we have all the new digital threats, you know, the DDoS, the attacks, the surveillance, the trolls who radicalize and use hate speech to advance their extreme causes. Also, the greater reach and the greater control, making it even further from their own countries, it's not only in the hands of all these good forces, but also in the hands of very dictatorial and very powerful forces that either are able very, very, in a very sophisticated way, to control the information in a country. So they can block all the information in a country. They can censor the information. And so it's a big, big challenge. So at the end, at the heart of this change, the role of journalism's question is like, well, everybody can circulate and produce information, you know. So journalism is a dying profession. You don't have to be a journalist to produce information. So many citizens and many NGOs are producing better information than the journalists, so why would we need journalists? And that is at the heart of the kind of thinking we've been doing. So what I believe, and what that's why we are still funding journalism, is that journalism is still needed to do five things that other people not necessarily do. The first one is to inform of what's happening without an interest, a vested interest, per se. If you have a professional view of the world, you are not interested that what is happening favors this or favors that, or is for peace or against peace, or it's just what's happening, and you just go and tell what's happening, whether it's convenient or not. The second one is to explain. A lot of people can tell lots of stories, but journalists should be the experts in explaining and in contextualizing, in connecting, especially when you have the huge amount of information you have today. If you have somebody that connects, contextualizes, tells you, okay, this happened, but this compared to this. And this happened here, but this connected to what happened there. And then very far. Who's going to know if you read and what you read is true or not true? You cannot possibly know unless you know some trusted people that have a methodology of searching truths, and in that methodology is called verification. And the last thing that we are doing, which I think it's very interesting role, and it's new role, it's modern, and it's a new role in a way, it was an old role, but now it's massive role, it's moderate conversations. We feed these conversations, we moderate them, we bring public dialogue, and we can, a good journalist can actually do a lot for the public discourse to be intelligent, to be not hateful, to be to be feeding with good quality information, to be fed with a good quality of information. So when I said, what are we doing, I did this very funny, very simplistic kind of graphic. You can tell I'm not a designer. And this is basically what Oversight Foundations is. And this is for some of you who may not know. It's a huge philanthropic organization, probably one of the two or three biggest in the world. It has about 1,800 employees, about 500 members of different boards all over the world. It has like a very basic structure in which it has regional programs. So there's the Latin American program and the Asia program and the regions of the world. And then it has thematic programs on health and education and higher education and early childhood and different kinds of action. Human rights is a very big program. And one of these programs is the program that we run called the Program of Independent Journalism. Now, this doesn't mean that we are the only ones that have some relationship to media. There's many other programs in the Open Society. What's interesting about the Open Society, which is different in terms of development and in terms of how they work in the world, is that it has a lot of local foundations. So you have local foundations run by local people with a local board that is part of the Open Society sort of network of foundations. There's about 40 foundations in the world. So what's our philosophy and what is it that we do? This is how we define what we do and what we want to do. We want to support initiatives led by individuals or collected that are striving to inform society or protect journalism under great difficulties or in moments of great opportunity when things are changing, like for example in Sri Lanka today or Indonesia today. And what we do is we have four lines of work. We do a lot to try to connect journalism initiatives and support them that are trying to perform this new role in society in the digital era, that it's to inform, verify, and mediate public discourse. What we call the opening journalism, which is of course not our term, it's Alan Rusbridger's term, and it's how they are trying to practice journalism. The other thing is to support cross-country networking for investigative reporting. Of course, we support a lot of big and small NGOs that are working for a free and safe environment for journalists. And we have created a little pocket that is obsessed with circulating knowledge. And I'm going to explain a little bit more about it. So this is what we do in the opening journalism. This is how we see journalism. It goes, if you see a place where there's no free debate, where there's no flow of free ideas, looks like the first graph there, very poor. If ideas and discourse and people producing ideas are these little tiny fragile plants, so we want to plant more of these voices. So what we're doing is we support these startups. Then we help those that are growing, like this little tree, to solve their problems, at least look for a way to solve their problems. And we help them not only with support, financial support, but also with our expertise, with our guidance. And then fostering experimentation, because since we don't know where the digital revolution is taking us, We want to see what's happening. How can we put experimentation at the service of development, of the needs of the developing countries? Because this is not very easy. A lot of the experimentation is happening in the north, in Europe, in the US particularly. And of course, they're solving problems of those societies. But what about, how do we use the famous podcasts that are now a huge boom in the US? How do we use this podcast to reach, for example, rural societies in the third world? How do we use, how do we deal with the problem of the cost of the phone? Yeah, you can reach people through phone, but what about the cost? How do you circumvent censorship? What are the opportunities that are being opened with the mobile to go after, you know, to circumvent censorship in a country where the internet is blocked? So these are the kinds of things that we are wanting to support. I am just putting you some of the examples. For example, of the things that we are funding, we fund this website or this. It's more than a website. It's more like it's a mobile site that is definitely working with the rural areas of Kenya, and it has developed a school how to train the citizen journalists, the rural people, to work to improve their journalism and the quality of their reporting. And then you have, for example, tech hubs in Africa that are working at the same time with technology, startups, activists, citizens. And so what we're doing is funding a little bit of research there to see how they could engage journalists better. Because you know what we are finding out? That a lot of innovation in the world, in media, are not being done. It's not being done by journalists. It's being done by activists, by social networkers, by other kinds of people. In the problem solving for growth, for example, we are under extreme circumstances of Azerbaijan, where you have basically all the media that could be independent out of the country, and it's a very difficult atmosphere, and yet there are media like this one that I'm showing you here that it's based outside the country, but it's producing very good information from inside the country, and it keeps reporting and informing its own citizens. Investigative journalism, what we have concentrated, there are over 200 centers or media outlets specialized in investigative journalism in the world, so it's impossible to fund them all. But what we are doing is fostering and funding the capability of networking, of working together. And we are just putting some of the main networks that are working in the world today, like the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or EPs in the Latin American scenery, or the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, which that works in Central Europe and a little bit in the eastern part of Europe. It's what they do, for example, is they follow crime and they expose crime and they expose the connections between politics and crime. ICIJ is probably the most known. I don't know if you've heard about SwissLeaks, about the HSBC scandal, about all of these stories have been broken by the ICIJ. And then there is the journalist, and it has all kinds of threats, legal, physical, digital threats. So we also support many of the main organizations. So one of the most known is the Committee to Protect Journalists, which is based in New York, that has a global reach and really does an amazing work in protecting journalists all over the world, and also in promoting change in some of the policies and some of these legal frameworks of the countries that make it impossible for journalists. to flourish. And then we want also to support and promote the circulation of knowledge, so we can share that, you know, create communities of learning, peer-to-peer learning. So we publish stories about them. We want to partner with some of the people that are already doing this knowledge sharing. So I want to just finish with some questions in mind, just to start off the conversation. If there's no problem business model, how will this journalism initiative survive? Okay, we can have them for a while, but then what will happen? It's very difficult to find an answer to that question. Could we be funding outlets that in a few years discover they are no longer needed? What I'm saying is that the trend some of the people are seeing is that they're not going to be surviving small platforms. They're all going to completely be overtaken by the Facebooks and the big platforms. So if we keep funding this small media, are we funding sort of dinosaurs that are going to die anyway? If the violent actors do not need the messenger anymore to deliver their messages, I'm thinking, of course, about ISIS, will it be increasingly impossible to protect journalists? Because before you would appeal to some sort of sense of morality or some of fighters' morality, or you would appeal to the need that you would take care of the journalist because the journalist was also a way to put out their propaganda of some of these violent groups. But today they have their own propaganda machines that are amazingly effective. So what they don't care about killing a journalist. So that's a difficult trend that we're seeing. And then what about the language barriers? If networks are a must to survive, how do we overcome the huge language barriers? And then if you want to overcome the digital divide, the technological distance, the information misery that some places have, there's no good alternative information, how to signal journalists what is useful information is very, very difficult. So my question to you is, if you were in my place doing this very fascinating but very difficult job, what would be your priority? What would you think would be the most important thing you would accomplish? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Maria. That was a very interesting, stimulating talk. You've thrown out a question to the audience, so does anyone want to come back right away to answer that? You may well have your own questions for Maria, of course. People are thinking about that challenge you've thrown out. Let me just ask one question that follows up while people think of their questions or maybe think of their responses. You said earlier on that the good news is now it's so easy and so cheap to inform the world. But at the same time, because it's so cheap and easy, that means there are more and more people doing it. There are more and more counter-messages, confusion. It's difficult to get secure attention, although it may be more and more important to secure attention. So obviously you already have enough to do, but how do you think about supporting the context in which people receive the news, in which the news can make a difference in their lives, in the context, which go beyond the context of what journalists do, but of the context in which that news takes root and actually makes a difference? Because that needs to, in the end, be supported as well, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, there is a big impact on, and that's even more and more the discussion. If we are supporting journalism, how do we know that journalism is getting there? That actually people are actually exposed to these new ideas and do something with them. And so there are a lot of people who are spending a lot of money measuring impact and measuring how, if you publish this story, what happens to that story? Does it lead to action? It's very difficult to get into that because, of course, if you do that, you run the risk of using journalism as a tool. And if you as an instrument, and if you use journalism as an instrument, it can lose its independence and it can lose its disinterested look at things. Because I think what makes journalism still valuable in a world where everybody's talking with some interest
is that it's the only one that it's supposedly, at least supposedly, but the good ones at least, are still trying to inform without trying to push anything. You're not trying to sell anything or an idea or an ideology. What you're trying is just to say what's happening. And I think that's something very, very important to keep. Otherwise, in this sea of information, people would get lost. So it's a tricky thing. We need to know what's the impact of journalism and that we are funding the ones that have an impact. But at the same time, if we go too much down that route, then we're going to ask journalists to become completely interested. Okay, if you don't bring me, if you don't show me how many people bought vaccines because of this article, then it's no good. That article is no good. And what about the public debate? No.
So is that the problem with the funders, that they, in effect, they want to not just encourage you to support the process, but you to provide the evidence, the measurements?
Oh, yes, proof. a lot of funders are doing that.
If they were to say, well, we trust you to build the context, that might be more effective rather than undercutting itself, because people chase the measurements.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm, that's interesting. Who has a question? There we are, there's our first question. We've got a microphone, we'll come to you so everyone can hear it.
Hello, I have two questions. The first one would be whether in this context where we have so much content being created competing for our attention, you can see that the media, the companies that are actually having success are the ones giving an opinion, an informed opinion, of course, but still opinion. Like you have the example of The Economist and the New York Times. Like, they are not just stating facts, they are usually providing an added value, because in the digital context, you will usually have the facts in many places. So in these gated communities, in for example, the website that can still charge you for access to the content, what you are paying for is not the facts, it's the information. In this context, competing for attention, would that be a viable alternative for funding of these initiatives? Like, not just providing the facts, but also providing that added value that users would be willing to pay for?
I think it has to be, because journalism has to play that role. And it's not so much opinion. I wouldn't call it opinion. Of course, these sites also have, and these media that you mentioned, have a lot of opinion that guides the public debate and feeds the public debate. But I think the real value, I think it's two kinds of values of the kinds of sites we see are successful. One is they explain, connect, contextualize, but also provide the data, provide the extra information, all of that. So it's not just stating the facts. And then the other thing that's very important and that we've seen it's having more and more success, which has its pros and its cons, it's the very niche media. So if you, for example, there is a media in Brazil that only covers the judiciary, and it's very specialized on that. So now they have a paywall, people pay for it, because of course it's serving the whole community that are interested in what happens in the judiciary and the laws and the legal decisions. And so that's the kind of media that's having a lot of success, and especially that is able, more probable to fundraise, to get their money, to continue working. But the general kind of media, I think it is absolutely key, and we look for that. And the media that we fund is exactly that. It has a very strong component of explanation, of opinion, of guidance, of verification with the tools, with the data. With
The good question that I had, I forgot to I'm studying intellectual property here at the LSE. And I see that you are placing a great value in networks. I was wondering, from the foundation, how are you distributing this content? I mean, are you using open licenses for this content that you are promoting? Is there, like, and I'm not sure if you have the information right now, but I was wondering whether you also supported open licenses, for example, for this content.
Yeah, we do. We support a lot of open licensed content and also open software, so that if people develop software, it's anybody else can use it, because we want this to have a bigger impact. But when I talk about the networks, it's not networks that circulate information. These are networks that produce information, so it's original information. It's their own intellectual property. But they do share it very widely. So, for example, ICIJ does an investigative story done by 50 reporters in 50 different countries, and they publish it together in 50 different outlets at the same time. So the impact is very big.
Great. Question in the front there.
I'm a media and communication governance student at LSC, and I work in the media myself as well. I'm from Pakistan, and Open Society has one of the top journalists in the country as a director in Pakistan till April 2015. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that I feel that investigative journalism cannot be replaced by the citizen journalism and the kind of online journalism by citizens that we see, because sometimes the journalists have access to information which ordinary people can never have. We can put up a selfie at an event, but we cannot go into the details of what the, you know, who are behind it and the pros and the cons. So your think about the fact that yes, investigative journalism is something that you should be a priority for you to fund. My question is that this part about if the violent actors do not need a messenger anymore, they will just kill the journalists. But there are also not many violent actors, they're just state actors who kill journalists also. So do you have a program to protect journalists from them?
Yes, well, we don't have a program. We fund people who protect them. In Pakistan especially, we are trying to develop an idea, which is to bring together a lot of the editors, of the top editors of the country, so that they can develop a way to protect their own journalists and at least react in a coordinated way and in a massive way, saying we're not going to allow this to happen. And you're right, a lot of the killings are done by security forces, by corrupt members of the parties. And I think if the media investigate those cases, it wouldn't be the level of impunity that they have today, not just in Pakistan, but for example in Brazil. We had 6 journalists killed this year, I think 6, and the big media didn't report on it. Of course, if it's invisible, they will keep, there's no cost, they will keep. So we are in the business of supporting all the efforts and all the media and all the organizations that are trying to not only protect the journalists in the sense that if somebody is in danger, have a network to take them out of the region or whatever, but also to create an atmosphere where the media can push back and say, and then investigate and expose those who kill journalists. And if they do it in a common way, they have the strength to do it. If they do it alone, it's very difficult.
Thanks. Damien, you had a question, and then there's the person there. Damien?
You partially answered my question in your last response, but given that you've been a successful journalist in Colombia, and I understand Colombia is one of the most dangerous places in the world to be a journalist, can you just explain why that is? What can be done, and how that experience informs your own work for the Open Society?
I think I'm going to answer to you standing, otherwise I can't see you. I think that it has been vital for me, that experience. I think in Colombia right now, fortunately, it's not as dangerous as it used to be for journalists. We still have journalists being killed for their independence or for their reporting, but not in the numbers that we used to have. and not for such nationally organized kinds of organizations. Now it's more of a local reporter because they were, but it's still terrible. And so, but yes, in many of the years I was working as a journalist, we did experience very serious threats. I had to do a lot of coverage of stories when the paramilitaries were sort of taking half of the country, the guerrillas were taking the other half, so it was a difficult moment. And what that informed me is that you have to be together. You have to stop when safety is the issue. The only way to push back is if competing media, which is in our DNA as journalists to compete, we have to stop competing when it refers to safety. And in Colombia, we were able to create a foundation, which is called the Foundation for the Freedom of Expression. And that foundation actually created a voluntary network throughout the country that I think has saved many, many lives and has pushed back in a number of times. And has, for example, there was the deputy director of La Patria de Manizales, which is a small town, well, medium town, traditional newspaper. The deputy director was assassinated. And so when a group of journalists led by Zimana, but also by the FLIP, went to this town and did together, like 10 reporters did the reporting of the killing of this journalist, trying to understand who killed them, why. And we published the same story, like in 10 different outlets, national outlets, on the same day. So that was a way to push back, to say they cannot kill us all, and we care for this reporter. And what happened at that point in time, we couldn't say this was the killer, but we could say what he was denouncing, and we did do a lot of investigative reporting about, okay, there are some specific politicians that he has been denouncing and he has been exposing. And then many years passed. And only this year, I think after 15 years, he was killed. Because the Colombian journalists didn't let go the story of Orlando Sierra. They created a prize, an award about his case. And this year, finally, the politician that was mentioned in that first story is now convicted by the Supreme Court for killing that journalist. And he finally, the truth came out and justice was done. So the next politician that wants to kill a journalist can think it twice, because they would say, well, at the end of the day, they may catch me. So yes, it was a very important experience from the open society to come to the open society. And of course, the world is very big and everything is very different and you cannot extrapolate your experience. But you at least know how it feels to be threatened. You know how it feels to be, on the ground and having your friends being killed. So that, at least you have that empathy.
Thanks. So is the question there?
Yeah, so thank you so much for being here. I'm studying digital innovation from Colombia too. And I'm a journalist, and actually your question, I gotta say that it's a very difficult question, and you have extremely big challenge in front, because getting to what's the priority there is very difficult. Though, but I want to ask you, I know you said that you have like 6 different focuses for the journalistic view right now, but I want to ask you if those focuses can be move towards like empowering people through the journalism. Do you think that journalism can really empower people at this spread of technology right now? Or do you think that the spread of information right now is completely like taking people out of getting people to their own sources, and journalism is getting out of the scope?
I think that's the danger. I think journalism is getting out of the scope. And people in many countries, they only read Facebook. They don't read anything else. But what does Facebook have? Has what other people recommend. And sometimes those are stories of journalists. So
I think that it's a bigger challenge to produce better journalism. I think good journalism now is really standing out because it's so difficult. There's so much just, you know, aggregation and just... When you look at the same story in 20 different outlets, you see it's all aggregation. It's all the same original content. So if you produce original content, even if it's from a little tiny town, it could be you're the only one producing original content from that town. Especially local and regional journalism has a lot to offer for the world, but also especially for democracy locally, because it will inform these citizens about what's happening there, because the rest of the internet will never inform you about your town as much as you can. And if you think about Colombia or Argentina, or we don't have, for example, good newspapers or good outlets covering the city, the capital cities. Just concentrating on just the city, a very good outlet doesn't exist in many, many cities in the world, even though, you know, you have 20 million people living in Sao Paulo, another 20 in Karachi. So, yeah, I think good journalism is the challenge.
Thanks. We have a question here.
Hi, my name is Bhavan. I'm a politics and communication student here at LSE. I was a journalist in Singapore and Southeast Asia. I just want to ask you, do you face pushback from governments, you know, when you fund, especially governments in the global south, when you fund media outlets in these countries, they see the open society as kind of like a conduit for Western liberal thinking. Basically, new colonialism, right? And links to George Soros, for example. And I can imagine there'll be huge pushback in Malaysia if a George Soros-led foundation funded the media outlet there.
Yes,
so
of course. Yes, it is. It is. There are a lot of resistance in many countries. And of course, George Soros is the founder and the one that's giving all this money away. And so people think this is some kind of a Western conspiracy. And also, I think that we have to be, a lot of very dictatorial autocrats could talk about and dismiss this kind of support to organizations because, of course, it means these are the critical organizations of the big governments, and George Soros has, and the Open Society Foundation has been put in blacklists and things like that in many parts of the world. But what I think it's a good thing for somebody like me that's running an organization from here that belongs to the South, no? It's a very interesting dilemma, and there are not many. And one of the things that you have to be very careful, and I'm always thinking about that, and you have raised that point, is about not repeating colonialism, being able to really not tell people what they need because I have the money, but really listen and try to give the money to what people are really asking you, the journalists really need, not what you think they need. And let them develop their own ideas, and you simply ask questions so that these ideas can last and are solid and all of that, but not tell them what to do. And that's a power differential that it's difficult to manage. And I'm learning, I'm very new, but it's a very challenging part of our job.
We got more questions from this side, which has generally been a bit quieter. Anyone got any questions over here in the center? Well, let me ask you, keep things going. What about crowdfunding? Has that any role here? If we think about the major problem of the economic model of journalism now, the need for new forms of subsidy. There are many people who care about this, who are interested in this, who are outside organisations. Is it possible to develop effective models? Maybe you're already doing this, to develop crowdfunding that can lead perhaps over time to certain social outputs which are valuable.
Yeah, I think crowdfunding and subscription are things that are like the ideal for a media, because you don't have to depend from a donor, you don't have to depend from anybody with some kind of interest or power or anything. You just receive the money of the people. Like one, there is one outlet in Nepal whose motto says, "A subscriber a day keeps the donor away." So I think that would be the most independent way you can be. You know, you're independent, and we've had amazing examples. One of our grantees, and in the past, it's no longer now, it's an independent media in Malaysia, for example. They crowdfunded to build their building, their first building, and they, the Malaysia Kini, and they told people, "Would you give us a brick? Because we are building our building, and could you give us a brick?" And a brick, of course, is not that people would give them a brick, but would fund them the cost of whatever, and some of them would fund a little bigger piece of the building. And they actually, I went to the how do you say when you start a building, the inauguration of the building, and it was beautiful to see this huge wall full of names, full of all the names of the people. They raised like $500,000 or something like that in Malaysia. Now, you have the, I don't know if there's anybody from Spain here, but there's the case of El Español that raised just to start about €3.5 million. So there has been possibilities of fundraising that have been very, very effective. And we're trying to learn from these very effective fund crowdsourcers how they're doing it. And I think more and more outlets, because this is a matter also of educating the public. We've seen in some cases, the first time they go out to do crowdsourcing, they get $3,000 and then, or euros or whatever money it is. And then the next time they get double, and the next time they get like five times. So people learn, and it's not yet the source, but it has been a source that it's becoming more and more important. And it's important not just because you get the money. Perhaps that's the least important thing. It's because there are people that care for you and for your information so much that they're willing to pay for it. And then you have a community. And if you really know how to engage this community, not just with money, but with information, with connections, with protection, with resistance when you get a lot of pressure from somebody else, then it's really the ideal kind of media you would want to have, no?
And pay for it not just as a consumer transaction's over, but as a, in a sense, a citizen who has a stake in the long-term project. So you're saying, in a sense, that it was a question I was going to ask you before, can journalism, understood the right way, help produce solidarity?
I think totally, and if it could do that before, I think it can do it much more today because of the technological possibilities of engaging with your audience and talking to them and be really their voice, and people would meet in your media because they feel your media is a way of living life, an ethical way of approaching communities. And so they feel identified. I don't know if some of you feel identified with some of the media you're using because you like the way they think and you feel that you're part of them. And some of the media that have achieved that, in especially the new outlets, are really amazing, and they're having a great success and a lot of influence because they're not just talking about themselves and what they think, but they're representing really a lot of people.
Perhaps you could, if there's no more questions, say a bit more about influence, because that's something, as people studying the media, we always have to ask, and we touched on that earlier. So what is the effect? What is the difference of a community alternative media and so on and so forth? So what would be examples of media funded that way, new media, that had most influence, that transforms things most effectively? Can you give us one or two examples, perhaps to end with?
Okay, well, one of the examples of media that has been incredibly influential and inspirational for other journalists to start their own media, because, and they quote this media, is El Faro, which is a dot-com that was born about 15 years ago in El Salvador, a tiny little country. And yet El Faro, I'm sure, has not only educated that generation of journalists, but it has had a lot to do with the creation of a new way of thinking in El Salvador, and also in the whole of Central America, the way they are producing information, and it has improved a lot the quality of the information. Now you have in other countries, for example, let me think about another one. Well, some of these networks of investigative reporting, they have actually trained, but not in the traditional sense of training, but actually the production of new kind of tools, in the production of software, in the mining of the data. How can you really get huge databases and really find where is the money laundering, where are the criminals of trends by unearthing it from mining that from data that they collect. Another interesting example is one outlet called Atlazo in Hungary. And this outlet is a very tiny operation. It's not so small anymore, but with a big impact. They do investigative reporting, and they also provide a very interesting public service. If anybody wants to get information from anything that's public in Hungary, because it's part of the European Union, so they created a system which you fill in a questionnaire in the website, and it goes automatically to the relevant public office. And when they get the answer, because they get the answer quicker and they get more attention because it's a media asking for the information. And then when they get the answer, of course, they send it to the person who asked for the information, but it becomes public domain, so it makes them public. And a lot of other journalists are doing stories from these public documents, and they've become, that's part of their own operation. They also have called for whistleblowers. If you see that there are people, and they, with a whistleblower platform, they're also, that guarantees their anonymity, they are getting a lot of public officials to denounce or expose corruption, which is another beautiful idea. And then you have the whole range of fact checkers. That's in vogue in journalism. A lot of people are doing fact checking, very inspired by PolitiFact, which was, to my knowledge, the first one in the US. And now you have Africa Check, which is a fantastic outlet that sits in a university in South Africa. You have Chequeado in Argentina that's checking both opposition and government all the time, all the public discourse. You have Stop Fake in Ukraine that's trying to check the discourse around the war to both, so it's saying to both sides in the war, you're lying when they're lying, and puts their lies out there. So those are all very interesting websites.
Thank you. Well, what an inspiring range of examples to end with. We're coming up to 6 o'clock. It's been a fascinating hour.